You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Yes, indeed, powered by the SID Media. 12 minutes, just 10, 13 minutes after the hour, 3 o'clock. You're listening to the Adventist World Radio, powered by the SID Media. We do have a Pastor Mazorere on the line. Good afternoon to you, my pastor.
Good afternoon, how are you?
Fine, how are you? How are you, Pastor?
I'm fine, how are you?
Thank you so much for joining us. I hope your day has been good.
Yeah, my day has been good, but my Wi-Fi is not that stable.
Oh, man. No, well, let's try and see if we can make it a very quick and a brief conversation. Then we're talking about Christ's ministry in the heavenly sanctuary. And the ancient biblical sanctuary and its services in Exodus chapter 25 to 27 reveal profound lessons for us this day in this sanctuary. And over the next couple of days, we will then be uncovering lessons and their meaning and their significance for us today and for eternity. Now, for those who are not familiar with this language, Pastor, what is a sanctuary? How should they understand a sanctuary to be?
Okay. Like you have already summarized and mentioned, the sanctuary, before we delve into its etymology, let's take it as God's plan to be with his people. You'll discover that right from the day that Adam and Eve sinned and a gulf was created between God and man, God indicated his wish and his intentions to always be with man. It was Adam who was now running away and hiding from God, but it was God who came seeking after him. And he instituted a plan that would ensure that this gulf that had been created could be closed even forever and until eternity.
Yeah.
So that was the day that the sanctuary and its system was given birth to, when God then went ahead to demonstrate to Adam and Eve that they could in no way hide the nakedness that had been brought by their unfaithfulness, by the works of their own hand, because they had tried to sow fig leaves for themselves. But God demonstrated that the situation in which they were in could only be solved and dealt with if blood was to be shed. Hence, God had to make for them animal skins. And the inference we make there is that an animal had to be killed for Adam and Eve to be clothed. And that is when the sanctuary system was given birth to. But as we now move on into the Old Testament, like I've mentioned in Exodus, that's where we now hear God saying, let them make for me a sanctuary so that I may dwell amongst them. But this was not the first time this thing was being instituted. It was there right in Eden after Adam and Eve had sinned and they were running away from God, and God had to put in place the plan that he had instituted hatched even before the earth was created to demonstrate to them that it requires the shedding of blood. And the whole sanctuary system, as we shall see, hinges on the shedding of blood and God's will to dwell amongst and with his people.
Yeah, beautiful. Now, why is it important for us to understand its very depth of importance, the depth of the importance of this?
I would want to say, let me start by saying there are six doctrines. There are six doctrines. Any other biblical teaching derives from those six doctrines. We've got this doctrine of God, the doctrine of salvation, the doctrine of man, the nature of man, doctrine of Christian life, doctrine of the church, and then the doctrine of last day events. And when you look at them in detail, there are then a lot of other things that would come up, maybe as Adventists, we talk of the 28 fundamental beliefs and so forth. All those things, they come from these six doctrines. But the sanctuary system is the hub upon which these doctrines can make sense.
Mm.
We are never going to fully appreciate and understand who God is and what he has done for us as human beings and what his will is for us if we don't appreciate and understand the sanctuary doctrine.
Mm.
We can never understand the plan of salvation. It's impossible to understand the plan of salvation if we do not understand the sanctuary system. You can never justify the whatever you learn in the doctrine of last day events if you can't understand what happened during the sanctuary yes, system and what occurred on the Day of Atonement what it means to us today. Even the doctrine of the church, for God to be able to say, I've got my own church, you'll discover that it points back to what occurred in the sanctuary. The sanctuary is of crucial importance. We cannot come up with any doctrine. In fact, any doctrine that does not point back to the sanctuary system, that doctrine is baseless. It has no foundation in scripture. It's man-made. So understanding the sanctuary system is very, 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 very imperative for us to be able to appreciate all the other doctrinal teachings that we find in the Bible.
That's very important, actually, what you're saying, because it means that then it's very serious business, eh?
It is very serious business. Sanctuary system is serious business. And if each and every Christian would understand the sanctuary system, much of the debates that we do have today would be a thing of the past.
Yeah. Now, Pastor, tell us about the physical appearance and the arrangement of the sanctuary.
Oh, okay. You'll discover that when you are reading in the Old Testament, you'll come across the word, the term tabernacle.
Okay.
But when we say sanctuary, we are referring to the entire structure. The tabernacle was now the tent which Moses built, which was inside the enclosure. But let me start for beginners. Let me say, visualize yourself entering into someone's yard. You are right there at the gate. There's one entrance to enter into that yard. And then the fence that is surrounding the house, take that to be the enclosure which surrounded the entire structure, which I'm saying was the tabernacle. And this one, whilst they were still moving in the wilderness, it was linen cloth. It was linen cloth. The fence was linen cloth, which surrounded the structure, which is called the tabernacle.
Okay.
The entrance was one. There was only one entrance to the tabernacle, and this entrance was always found on the eastern side of the structure of the tabernacle. So when you enter into someone's yard via that single entrance, there is that house that you're seeing there. Let's suppose it's a two-roomed house. It's a two-roomed house. But before you get to the two-roomed house, there are two structures or important, elements that are between the entrance and that two-roomed house. And these two structures, the first one is like an altar, which wherein or upon where sacrifices were burnt. That was the first structure that you would come to as you entered through the gate. You'd come to this altar where you'd sacrifice the animal. Then after that, immediately after that, in a straight line, you'll then get to a basin or a bowl, which was always filled with water. So we are saying it's the enclosure, the linen cloth that is surrounding the tabernacle. There is one entrance, which is on the east. Then as you enter into that entrance, you are facing the entrance to the two-room structure that is way ahead of you. But before you get to the two-room structure, there are two other stops that you'll need to get past. The first stop is an altar, which has got burning fire. That's where you burn your sacrifice. And as you proceed towards the two-roomed structure, you come across the bowl or basin of water. There, the priest would wash his hands before they entered now into the first room of that two-roomed structure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So as you get into the first room of this two-roomed structure, this two-room structure is the one that the Bible refers to as the tabernacle. But like I have said, the entire place was called the sanctuary, starting from the linen enclosure, the entrance, the altar where you'll bend the sacrifice, the basin, the whole place was called the sanctuary. But this two-room structure is the one that is specifically referred to as the tabernacle. So as you would enter into the first room of this two-roomed tabernacle, there were three pieces of furniture that you would find in that first room.
Mm-hmm.
The first piece of furniture in the northern side, it was the table of showbread. It was the table of showbread whereby six small loaves on one side and other six small loaves on the other side, 12 in total. Always they were present. There was not a time when bread was not availed in that first room. Then on the southern side, there was a golden lampstand, which had seven candlesticks, which had fire that would always burn. Because remember, there was no other source of lighting inside this tabernacle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this lampstand was the priests would ensure that the fire would not go out, lest there would be total darkness when you walked in. So this lampstand was there to, the candlestick was there to provide light the moment you entered the first room. Then there was a curtain that divided this first room from the other room, which was the second room. But right before this curtain, there was another small altar whereupon the priest will burn incense. So we now have two altars. Right from the time you entered the entrance of the enclosure, you found the altar of sacrifice whereby the animals were burnt. But inside the first room of the two-roomed structure, we have got the altar of incense. No animals were burnt here. Only incense was burnt on this altar. So this altar was right before the curtain, which divided the two rooms. If you would open the curtain now, you would enter into the second room or apartment. And this second room, there was only one piece of furniture which was found there, which was called the Ark of the Covenant. The very same Ark that was carried by the children of Israel each time they will be moving from, when they were moving from Egypt to Canaan, the same Ark that at some point was taken by the Philistines and Uzzah tried to hold it as it was about to, that was the very same Ark that would then be placed in the second room. Now, I want to give the technical names of all these places now.
Okay.
So let's go back to the entrance. When you go back to the entrance, we call it the Eastern Gate because always the entrance was on the east. I think tomorrow we'll explain why the entrance was always on the eastern side. So we are on the Eastern Gate. Then, of course, the altar of sacrifice, that was the technical name, the altar of sacrifice. The basin or the bowl of water was called the Levi Basin. The Levi Basin, that was the technical name. So we have got the Eastern Gate, we have got the altar of sacrifice, we have got the Levi Basin. These three are found outside the tabernacle.
Okay.
So this whole place, which is outside the tabernacle, it was referred to as the outer court. Okay. You are still outside the two-room structure.
Mm-hmm.
So you are in the outer court, and there are three important things in the outer court: the entrance, the Eastern Gate, the altar of sacrifice, and the Levi Basin, wherein was water by which the priest would wash.
Mm.
Then as you enter into the first room, technically, the technical term for the first room was called the Holy Place.
Okay.
It was called the Holy Place, and we've already said there were three pieces of furniture in the first room or the Holy Place. That was the table of showbread, that was the seven the lampstand with seven candlesticks, and the altar of incense. So three items outer court, three items in the Holy Place in the first room, but one item in the most holy place. So the second room of this two-roomed tabernacle was called the most holy place. The out place is called the outer court. The first room is called the Holy Place. The second room is the most holy place. So it's like you are ascending, and there is an increase of holiness as you are ascending and going towards the final phase of this whole structure. And there was only one piece of furniture, like I have said, the Ark of the Covenant.
Mm-hmm.
So the Ark of the Covenant was always found in the most holy place. Then in the Holy Place, we have three pieces of furniture: the altar of incense, the candlestick, and the table of showbread. Outside the tabernacle, we've got the Levi Basin, we've got the altar of sacrifice, and the entrance, maybe also the linen enclosure. But let me also say, no one was allowed to enter into the first room and to the second room if you were not a priest to start with. Only priests will enter the first room, and then high priests were the only ones who are allowed to enter the most holy place.
Okay.
Priests, holy place, high priest, most holy place. If we are just a child of Levi, but not of the house of Aaron, because only the house of Aaron was selected to produce the priests. But any other child of Levi, they will just work and help on the outside court. This needs also to be emphasized because it's important as we'll move on.
Okay.
I think for now, that's what I can say about the structure itself.
Yeah, quite some detail there. Quite some detail. Let's wrap up the conversation, Pastor. Now, you are describing what the earthly sanctuary looked like. Did it look similar to the heavenly sanctuary? But what was the relationship between the two, actually? Did they coexist? Is the one superior to the other? Did they serve different purposes? But just to wrap up in the next 3 minutes.
Okay. That's a very pertinent question, because a lot of people are actually challenging the doctrine of the sanctuary on the basis of there no physical, sanctuary in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
But now you'll have to pull out certain texts from scripture for you to be able to substantiate the belief that there is no sanctuary in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, we are told that there is a physical place where God dwells in heaven. Daniel chapter 7, I saw thrones being placed, and one like this Ancient of Days sitting on one of the thrones. Angels were there ministering unto him. That's a physical place. Revelation chapter 4 and Revelation chapter 5, they speak of and describe a courtroom scene in heaven, very physical. It's not spiritual.
Yep.
Revelation chapter 19, if I'm not mistaken, is it 19 verse 11? John says the temple of God in heaven was opened, and I saw the Ark of the Covenant. So that's why I'm saying you really need to pull out certain texts for you to believe this modern teaching that there is no physical sanctuary in heaven. It's all spiritual. It's in Christ. Yet the Bible is very specific. John saw an Ark. He saw the Ark of the Covenant. He saw Christ walking amongst the seven candlesticks. In Revelation chapter 1, I think it's verse 10, he saw Christ walking among the seven candlesticks. Those are physical things. Those are spiritual things. If those things were Christ, then John could not say, I saw Christ walking amongst the seven candlesticks. So these are very physical things. And when you come now to Exodus, that's why God actually said to Moses, I want you to build a sanctuary like the one after the pattern of the one that I have shown you. So Moses was shown the one that he built was a miniature representation of the one that he was shown. So he was shown the one, the real, the actual, the real, sanctuary that is in heaven. And he was told to build a miniature sanctuary here on earth. So the sanctuary on earth, the role it played in teaching the plan of salvation and making it viable, pointed to the actual sanctuary in heaven, which plays the same role, but as the antitype of that which Moses had built, which was the type. So Moses built a type, a miniature, a plan. I don't know what they call it, the architects, when they want to come up with a structure, they start with those funny little things built with papers and everything else. That's what more like what Moses did, but the actual building will be brick and mortar. So the actual building, the actual sanctuary is there in heaven. It's literal. John saw instruments that pertain to the sanctuary, and we must not be swayed by people who are now thinking that there is no physical sanctuary in heaven.
Yeah. A beautiful one. Well, Pastor, I think that this was a very beautiful and very well detailed, I must say, intro to our discussion. We're going to be connecting once again tomorrow at the same time and same place.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Pastor. Have a great, great afternoon.
Okay.
Bye.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.